You're listening to a real piece of work. I probably shouldn't say it that way. You're listening to A Real Piece of Work, a jobs podcast for aspiring professionals brought to you by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, and Junior Achievement of the Heartland. Now here's your host.
Mookie, good to see you again today. Glad to be connecting here on a great topic that's near and dear to my heart because this spring, all I've been doing is chasing sidelines, as you know, and as much as I try to prepare, I feel like I'm never really prepared for weather conditions. And this guest we have today is the epitome, in my opinion, of what I need to do every time I walk out the door and jump in the car is to make sure I have the proper apparel sitting in the car, because very good odds that Mother Nature is going to mess with me. I needed to be appropriately dressed, and I couldn't be more excited about this because not only is this person keeping the people that show up warm and comfortable as they probably are taking in loved ones that are on a competition field, but the show up aspect of what this guest is going to address is near and dear to my heart because I keep saying that I get to. I always say it as I'm spending hours and hours and hours in the car, and I'm about to hop in the car tonight to drive 3 hours to Chicago to have 3 or 4 days of soccer. Hopefully I don't need some extra warm apparel, but at the end of the day, it is about showing up and supporting these youth that are listening to this program, and just couldn't be more excited about the opportunity to chat with Howard today. So what do you got, Maddie?
Rebro, I love how we have to change names because the two Matts starts to get confusing. So calling me Moogie's just fine. It's been around for a long, long time. Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, two things I think about. One is you're talking about apparel. Like the Midwest starter pack is like everything under the sun because the weather changes so much here. And the second piece I'm excited about with this guest is we keep talking about how we're just two dads trying to figure it out. And today, I think we're just going to be three dads who are just trying to figure it out. So can't wait to hear more about Howard, a constant mountain, and his journey to entrepreneurship.
So, Howard, thanks for joining us today. We've heard your story about transitioning from a product manager to inventor, sparked by that chilly morning at your daughter's soccer game, which led you to build the Infinity Pocket. By buying a sewing machine and a prototype late into the night. Can you walk us through the moment you're at the Dodgers soccer game where the Infinity Pocket idea was created and how Constant Mountain first hit?
Yeah, I can. And if I were to sum it up in one word, that word would be irritation. I was irritated that my hands were as cold as they were. I made a conscious decision. I don't know why. I mean, I guess it sticks out because I've reflected on it, but I made a conscious decision to wear a zip-up jacket versus my favorite Pink Floyd hoodie that I usually wear because I like, you know, want to put my hands in there and it gets cold in the morning here. I'm in Atlanta and I do remember pausing and making the decisions like, do I wear the hoodie? Or do I wear this zip, you know, this light zip-up jacket? Because I knew it's going to start off in the 30s that morning, but it's going to end up in the 60s, close to 70 that afternoon. And on top of that, we're going to get in the car. There's going to be a request to turn the heat on full blast, so I'm going to need to take the jacket on and off. And I don't really need my shirt to come off in the parking lot. So anyway, I made the decision to wear the zip-up jacket, and as I was sitting there, kind of steaming. Not literally, but figuratively about my hands being cold. If my hands weren't so cold, I would have gotten my phone out and started cruising the internet to try to find a jacket that zips up where I could still put my hands together. And that was where the idea came from. And I couldn't find one. I looked for a long time. I couldn't find one. So that's where it all came from.
But you mentioned the idea. Many people have ideas, but what motivated you to go from concept to creation?
So I'm a builder kind of by nature. I was an engineer and I build things. I tinker with stuff. I've done it my whole life, taking stuff apart and see how they worked. And for some reason, that irritation was pretty strong, and it just persisted to the point where I would lose sleep. I would lay awake at night thinking about how to fix it. Number one, I couldn't believe that that it wasn't available. I thought that something like that, I mean, surely I would be able to find something that did that. We put somebody on the moon, but I can't have a jacket that does this. And it was it was unacceptable to me. So I laid awake thinking about it at night, you know, as I was trying to drift off to sleep. And I don't know, after maybe a few weeks, I don't know how long I had I would think about concepts and kind of it would turn over in my head and came up with, oh, I think this will work. And then I just started buying zippers and playing around with them until I figured something out.
But you were trying to figure something out, but making a leap to literally creating a product that people can buy, was there anybody of influence that helped you bridge that gap to go from idea to literally be able to create a product that's out in the marketplace for people to buy?
There's a few, and this is going to, I'll kind of go from more personal to more kind of larger inspirations. As far as a mentor, not really. I would say, my wife tolerates a lot of my foolishness. Whenever I go and, you know, why is there a sewing machine on the dining room table and all this fabric and all these zipper parts? Just don't worry about it. Just, you know, when the girls ask, daddy's in there doing something, just, you know, be nice to him. So my dad, I would say growing up, I mean, there was no calling somebody to come fix things around the house. You figured it out and you fixed it. Right. So, learning how to do that. And then going and then becoming an engineer, by education and then by trade as my first job, I was a controls engineer, worked in a lot of manufacturing plants. And I would say the owner of that company taught me a lot. The motto for the company was come hell or high water, right? It was going to get done. Like, I've never seen an automotive plant not start up on time. It was going to happen. You just, and it didn't matter what you ran into, you were going to get it fixed and sorted to get it moving, literally get the assembly line moving. So that kind of on a personal ground level. And then I took inspiration from others, right? Someone local here in Atlanta is Sarah Blakely, founder of Spanx. Her story really resonates. She's kind of a business hero of mine, where she had an idea, saw a real problem, and then just was tenacious in her drive to go get into the market, because she thought it was something that would exist, you know, that should exist in the world. It solved a real problem for her and a lot of other people. And then lastly, and this is much bigger, you know, I've always been a fan of Disney. We've got two daughters. We've spent a lot of time going to see the Mouse and the Princesses down in Florida. But his broader idea, and you don't really, it sounds trite of, if you dream it, it can come true. And it sounds a little bit hokey, but it's all about the idea of belief. And I think that belief is just, it's fuel to keep going, right? And once you realize something's possible, just keep going and keep working at it, because it's nothing but a series of problems that need to be solved, right? So it kind of folds back into what I started with, is I'm a builder, and I'll go build things. So that was kind of the genesis and the motivation to go and see it through.
So how do you start? How do you start building a new pocket, the Infinity Pocket? What does that look like from day one?
I think it's for me, it started with the design. It started with, here's the problem. How do I solve it? And then I'll start drawing things. I'm not an artist by any stretch, but you know, with my age, I was probably one of the last to come through at Georgia Tech who had to take mechanical drafting. Right. So just getting a pen and paper or a whiteboard and start drawing it out. And then it's kind of a classic engineering problem or process where you start drawing stuff, you get a design, and then all right, well, what do I need? Well, I need some zippers. Well, this zipper doesn't do exactly what I want. So how do I make it do what I want? Oh, well, I'm going to have to modify it. And if that involves getting a grinder and grinding something down and epoxying two zippers together, which is exactly what I did, that's the course you go about. Any part of it is, don't be constrained by artificial boundaries, right? And there's a lot of artificial boundaries. A lot of stuff can be done that you didn't think so. Just because it hasn't been done before doesn't mean you can't. And there's so many tools today that allow you to go and do things, right? More than you've ever had, not just in the physical world, but like in the virtual world or in the area of computer science. There's so many tools and so much is possible now. I don't know if that answered the question, but that's really how it started. Start with a design, you map it out, and then you just start tinkering with stuff, right? I'll start tinkering with stuff and put it together. Well, that didn't work. Let me try this until you hit on something that's going to work.
So Howard, did you create this zipper in some huge factory, or like, how did you start? I mean, you talked about the living room table and the sewing machine. Like, is this a Skunkworks garage project?
A little bit. Yeah. A lot, actually. There was a couple things that started with a Dremel and a little grinding attachment. But then, one of the things I inherited from my grandfather was like a bench grinder. So that was when I had to make a bunch of them at one time. I even modified a pair of vice grip pliers to be able to hold the zipper to be able to, you know, to fit in the channel. It's hard to explain, but anyway, it migrated from the dining room table into the garage, because you know you don't want sparks flying in your house. So yeah, that was it. That and some epoxy.
Oh man, Howard, I think you guys know I'm a brand and marketing guy for one of my day jobs. Constant Mountain, what does that mean? What's the brand mean? What's the mission? Now, what's the vision?
So it started off, I mean, looking back on how I came up with the name, it's a funny story. I mean, the ultimate genesis of it was it was two street names cobbled together. But when I... Again, it's kind of the same process. You're kind of tinkering with words, right? Instead of physical parts. And it just kind of clicked. There's kind of a symmetry to it. There's a cadence to saying it. It lended itself well to outerwear, because as my youngest daughter said, look, Dad, if you're going to sell a jacket, you got to have a mountain on it. And I was like, well, you know, you're probably not wrong there, right? But as I thought about it, and there were a lot of options, I don't remember all of them, but as I thought about it and I thought about why I was doing it, it started off with, I just wanted to keep my hands warm when I was sitting out there watching my daughter on the sideline, right? And I've never climbed an actual mountain. Like, I've walked up some hills, right? But I've never climbed up an actual mountain. But the people that had, they'll talk about the journey and the process around it, right? It's not just getting to the peak. And the truth is, that's where a lot of the value comes from. That's where a lot of the reason that people do it. But it's really a good metaphor for everyday life. It is like an everyday battle. It's like your everyday uphill battle, right? To go and get the kids where they need to go, get to work, make sure that you're doing all your chores, right? It's a constant every day. There's something, and the ultimate goal for me and for a lot of other people is you're doing it all for your family, right? I think as a parent, there's nothing you wouldn't do for your kids. And a lot of that is we're trying to figure it out, right? And that's kind of how I felt when I came with it. It's like, what am I doing out here? Well, I'm having a good time watching my daughter, but what's getting in the way? Well, I'm physically cold. I'm physically irritated. My hands are cold, so I can't. It's distracting from me watching my daughter out there kick the ball around.
So Howard, a quick question. Did I read properly that the first patent application was in 2018?
That's right.
We're sitting here in 2025. I mean, how did you stay motivated through all the trial and errors through this cycle?
I'm not a super patient person by nature. So there was a lot of self betterment in learning patience in that whole process, because it is a long process. And then you mix in COVID and the pandemic around that, and that just delayed everything. So it drug it out even further. But the process for getting a patent in itself is not very complicated. You have an idea. You need to have – it's got to be – like having a working prototype is I think, a necessity. I'm sure you could do it without it, but it makes it a lot easier if you've got a working prototype. But the first step is going and making sure that it's patentable. Right. It's not something else that's already out there. So that's the first step. There's a search. When that came back, and I still couldn't believe it. I was like, surely someone has done this before, but turns out no. So the next step is you apply for a provisional patent. And I think that's the one in 2018. And it actually started out earlier than that, because you've got to go through all that pre-work to go and check and see if there's a patent that already exists, and then move forward with the provisional patent. And then you've got that's really to kind of hold your place in line. And then there's the actual patent process. And then there's the examination, which is really outside of anyone's control. You can influence it by getting a patent attorney to go kind of poke at the examiner's office. But it's an exercise in patience. That's kind of my takeaway on this. And it's not, there is some investment that you have to have, like you've got to pay for it.
So Howard, how do you balance all your priorities? I mean, you're talking about kids and sports, and Rebro and I talk about that quite a bit with our travel schedules and day jobs and side jobs and everything else. How do you balance all the different priorities?
Yeah, so it's a really good question, and I think it all starts with and you don't arrive at this overnight. I mean, my kids are teenagers. I've been married for, wow, I'm over the hump, closer to 30 years than 20 at this point. So you learn. Somebody described it one time about juggling, right? And if you get to have too many balls in the air, which one do you let drop? Well, the one you can't let drop is your family, in my view of it, right? And I think a lot of people share this view. So family, children, that comes first. And then you kind of work backwards on what does it take to support them? Well, starting a company is not immediately revenue producing, right? So you've got to find a way to pay the bills and keep going on vacation and enriching the lives of your family and your children. So funny thing is like starting a new company is actually priority number three, right? Because priority number two is paying for things, right? Being able to support for any parent. So that's kind of number two. And then third is going and working on a business or working on something that's going to maybe leave a legacy for your children. It's going to satisfy some need or something that you think needs to exist in the world. That's the reason that your why has to be very strong. And there's a lot of people that talk about this. You know, I mentioned Sarah Blakely earlier. She's had a lot to say about your why. The driving force for starting something new has got to be really strong, and you've got to really understand what it is. And if you do that, then, I mean, look, we've all got time in the margins, right? And whether you fill it watching a TV show or reading a book or playing some game on your phone or scrolling through social media, all that time can be used for something else. And that's where I found the time and the balance, right? Is the others were not really negotiable. So you've got to clear out stuff that is negotiable, stuff that isn't critical, to go and make time to work on something new.
Howard, a couple times I've heard you reference we all have bills. You're starting up a company. You had a patent process. How did you approach funding Constant Mountain? What financing strategies help you launch the brand?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. I've been fortunate with some of the jobs I've had in the past, especially pre-pandemic. Had some good jobs, and so I bootstrapped as much as I could. It came to a point where I needed to go make some more investment, primarily on an inventory side. So I went out and reached out to friends and asked them to come along on the journey. I cast a wide net on that. I haven't gone for a single large investor for a couple of reasons, one of which was the people that I care about. It would be great. It'd be great for them to enjoy some benefit from this long term, right? But I also didn't want to. I wanted to limit exposure or risk for people individually, so that's why it was a larger amount of small investments that I was looking for from people that got it versus some big investment from one person when I was in that early of a stage. So I think it's pretty common for a lot of people for seed funding with like friends and family. So that's the point I'm at right now.
Well, Howard, in some of our homework here and today, you said it's never too late to pursue your passion, but you know, as we all go through these journeys, like there's some self-doubt. Was there ever a time where you're like, all right, I'm done with this? And how did you push through? How did you push through that? Cause it sounds like it's been a long process.
Yeah. It's an interesting question. I think part of it is this is going to sound ridiculous, but you can't let yourself think about it. Like you just can't let yourself go down that path. And I've always looked at it as starting a business, creating something new is, I've had a long career in the corporate world and going and solving problems for other people. Right. I view this whole thing as a series of problems to be solved. And I thought about this at the beginning. Until I run into a problem that I don't think can be solved, I don't have any reason to stop, right? So I don't really allow the thoughts to creep in about what am I doing? Why? I mean, certainly the seed of it will come in, but you got to squash it, right? You just can't think about it. Because if you dwell on it, you can spiral down a path And then you're in a mind state where you can't really get anything done, and you start to doubt yourself, which is just a killer, right? It's just a killer. So it's kind of a simple answer, but it's powerful, and you just got to trust that you're going to figure it out and keep going.
Howard, I'm going to circle back a little bit. You mentioned education engineer. Tell the listeners a little bit about your educational path, maybe some things that set you up for success. You've alluded to some of them. Are there any classes or experiences that you wish maybe you would have had a little sooner to help Johnson Mountain?
No, that's interesting. So I knew pretty early on that I was a math and I like a hands-on person more than a words person. And you can go back and look through my academic history, and my grades will prove that out too. I went to Georgia Tech here in Atlanta. It's hilarious because back then I didn't even have to. There was no essay in the application process to get in to school there. And as funny as that sounds, that was a big part of it. I didn't want to write an essay to get into a school. I did better in all my math subjects, and it just made sense. And from an early age, I've got a number of stories where I got into trouble or I irritated or made people angry with just taking stuff apart, right? If there was an exposed screw or bolt or something, I probably had too much access to the tools that my dad had, because there were a number of occasions where some toy or something that we had, and, you know, I share with my brother, you come back a couple hours later, maybe not even that long, and it'd just be a pile of parts sitting in the floor that I had just taken the thing apart. So I've had this tinkering aspect combined with being better at math than language or other like humanities, which is funny because I love to read. It just, I'm not going to get through the book as fast as other people. But I think that was where it led. And as far as stuff that classes I wish I had taken, I don't know. It's tough, right? I think I went down the path that made the most sense for me. I was a mechanical engineer, and I'm not sure how successful I would have been at anything else, to be honest.
That's completely good. It's one of those that I can imagine your mechanical background certainly set you up for success to literally create a product. But yeah, the different aspects of launching a business, sustaining a business, running a business, there's probably been some learning curves that you've experienced, I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, there have. And I would say that's where it gets into the easier part, right, where there's a determinate solution is going and fixing some physical problem. And going back to the statement of when do you start to call into question, hey, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Is this even going to work? And it being just a series of problems to solve. Well, sometimes the solve for the problem is go get some help, right? In an area where you're not as well suited, right? So that aspect of getting the word out is an area where when it comes time to scale, building things, producing things, super easy. I'm being a bit trite on that, but for me, that's a straightforward thing. Getting the word out and having that resonate with people has been a struggle.
Well, Howard, could you unpack that a little bit, and keeping in mind that we've got students, parents, educators that are taking this in today, Give me a little plug. Where is Constant Mountain? Where can I find the product? How can I buy it?
Sure. Yeah. It's constantmountain.com is the website. And that also factored into the name. The domain name was available in all the socials. So that's just from a practical standpoint. But yeah, constantmountain.com is where you can go purchase it. So that's the place.
Longer term, is there ambitions to potentially expand that beyond the website sales?
Yeah, for sure. And I've had a retail first mindset kind of from the beginning because it's such an experiential product. My favorite thing about this is watching somebody put on the jacket for the first time and experience the Infinity Pocket. The Infinity Pocket is what, I guess we haven't talked about that as much, is when you zip up the jacket, your hand will go literally, I'm wearing one now, you zip it up, your hand will literally go all the way through. So watching somebody put it on, pull the zipper, and then put their hands in, and then put their hands together, and then just their face will light up, right? And that's, every time I see it, it makes me so happy. It's hard to, at least for me, it's been difficult to convey that in the virtual space, right? Or not with somebody trying it on. So it's important. It was important for me to get it out into stores. That's been another focus, is for me to go out and get it into stores, specifically focused on independent outdoor retailers. Just again, because when I was thinking about it, well, if I was going to go buy a jacket, where would I go? I'd go to an outdoor store to get it.
So, love that answer, Howard. I shouldn't say obviously, but I'm assuming you're in the business of making some money and net profit, but I noticed that on your website that you've got an organization that hopefully is gaining some benefits from Constant Mountain. Can you tell us a little bit about One Warm Coat?
Yeah, so that was an interesting experience. I did not know about them until I think it was a year before last. We had some extraordinarily cold weather here in Atlanta, and I was just walking through. The news was on. It was talking about a coat drive, and didn't think a whole lot of it until I went and I was packing up an order, and I looked around, and it was towards the end of the selling season. And I had a lot of inventory sitting there, and it just seemed wrong to me that you have people out there who are really battling some harsh, like that literally can die of cold. And I'm sitting on this inventory, these jackets, and specifically the down puffy jackets that are really, really warm. I can solve that problem. It just seemed wrong. Right. So I donated a good number of jackets I reached out and I found the people at One Warm Coat and donated the jackets through them and got it on some people who really are experiencing some need. It's a thing I want to do more of. I've got a lot of ideas on how to provide more help. But it kind of comes with, you've got to do well to do good. Like you got to fund it somehow. My favorite thing in the world to do, and I have to be supervised at times, is I'll give away jackets. Right. And it's my favorite thing to do. I've told people, and I'm not joking about this, like if I hit the lottery, first I have to play it, but if I did play it a lot and I hit the lotto, I would just make jackets and give them away. I would love it.
Definitely appreciate that, and very noble of you. I'm sure a lot of folks with similar seat would love to be able to do that.
Well, maybe. I mean, it may be noble, but it's also super selfish, because I enjoy it. Like, it makes me happy. So So I think it's anyway, that's it.
Mookie, anything else running through your head that you want to make sure we address here?
No, man. I think it's your turn to ask the question that we ask all of our guests.
Well, I want to make sure we get to that, but I will throw it out to Howard first. Hey, by chance, to help promote Conson Mountain and create some of those sales that you, so you can continue to do those good things you're doing in the community. Any kind of code or anything that you might want to be offering up today to some of our listeners in case they want to get a Conson Mountain product?
Yeah, absolutely. If you type in real work, REALWORK, if I spelled it correctly, all caps, that's a discount code, and I think it's 45% off.
Whoa.
So if you go there, help yourself to some jackets. We have the one I'm wearing, which is it's a casual jacket, but it's really good in kind of milder weather, but surprisingly warm even on some cold days. But it's the hoodie that really started it all. There's a version of this that's just a vest that's really nice. I wear it a lot, like in the office, right? It's a way to kind of dress yourself up, pretty easy. And then a rain jacket that is phenomenal, that will absolutely do its job. I mean, that's really core principle number one. Any jacket you get from Costa Mountain is going to do its job, right? It's going to keep you dry. It's a full weather, you know, waterproof jacket, a 10K rated jacket. It's been thoroughly tested by a lot of people in some real rainy weather. And then the last is a down puffy jacket that, again, will absolutely do its job and keep you warm, you know, even up where you guys get real cold up in the northern part of the U.S.
Well, that's very, very generous, and hopefully we can help drive a little sales for you here and some raving fans up here in the Midwest. So
that'd be great.
Howard, you are absolutely a real piece of work. We want to make sure we wrap up with what we normally wrap up with is, you know, looking back at your 16-year-old self, what would you advise Howard to start doing, stop doing, and keep doing?
I would say probably start believing in myself a bit more. You gain that confidence over time, but it's never too early to start. As far as stop doing, I would say asking for permission. There's a lot of artificial boundaries out there that aren't real. And one of the things that I think, and kids today are better at it, right? And I think this is a positive thing, is there's, you don't have to wait your turn, right? And you don't have to ask for permission. There's not as many rules out there as you think. And then just to keep doing, I've always been curious. I wanted to know how things work. It's pretty stubborn and hard-headed. And I think a lot of success is just keep going, right? And that kind of folds back in. I'll bring it full circle to the showing up, right? You show up, and that's the start of persevering, and you just keep going. And it also develops confidence, right? Once you start getting things done and you persevere, then you realize what can be done. You start to find out where, you know, some of those boundaries don't exist that you thought were there. And it instills confidence.
Well, Howard, I can't thank you enough for supporting Junior Team of the Heartland. We shout out to them and our partners at WVIK today. I'm sure our listeners are going to not only love hearing your journey, but that 45% discount code for real work. If you go to ConsonMountain.com and check out the product, thank you very much for being a guest today.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Howard.
Well, Milky, one more phenomenal guest, and it just, it's a good reminder of why we do what we do in terms of podcasting here, and continue to go down that path. A couple dads just trying to figure it out. A few things that really just jumped out to me, having been in sales for nearly 30 years here now, something Howard said was half the battle is just showing up. There's so many times that being present somewhere has led to a relationship that may eventually lead to a job, a potential sale, or just a friend. And then the other thing, especially think about, you know, we've got teenage kids, and all the listeners out there, is, you know, believe in yourself sooner. I think it's pretty easy to get caught up with keeping up with the Joneses and what they're doing, or what you have or don't have and they have. And so that really resonated with me today, and I just loved hearing about the Constant Mountain story, and circles back to just all the sidelines that I continue to stand on and try to stay warm, and how much of a motivation that was for Howard to literally create a product and a business. It was pretty cool to hear his path. So appreciate you bringing him on today.
Yeah, Rebro, I think it's an interesting journey. Couple things for me. Number one is, you know, Howard didn't just create a solution and go try to find a problem. Like, he solved the problem. And secondly, what resonated with me, whether it be us as parents of sports children, or, you know, in our roles running around, like, every day is a constant mountain. It's a constant battle. And I think when you embrace that and try to get some enjoyment out of it, it works well. And the other piece I would say is around this one warm coat initiative. You know, I'm a big fan of you give to receive, just like you said. You know, you show up, and in a way, just showing up is giving. And I think that really resonated for me, and hopefully, you know, some of our listeners and folks that support this podcast, including Junior Achievement of the Heartland, WVIK, get the chance to try some of Howard's products.
Good stuff, buddy. Looking forward to next time.